Hello, everybody. This is Amir Alwani reporting for PotentNews.com. I feel kind of weird saying reporting because it's not really a report so much as a discussion of the concept of balance. Now, that's not to say that I'm fully 100% balanced. I don't know if anybody is. There's this sort of myth, or I don't know if myth is the right word, but we're sort of taught that, you know, you follow the blueprint, you go to school, you get a job, you get the white picket fence and a dog, and you marry someone you don't like, and then you die. Like, so, you know, that's not the way things are. You're supposed to keep learning your whole life. You're supposed to use your own mind to learn, so you can verify things for yourself. And the reason I'm coming out saying, wanting to discuss the concept of balance at this point in time is because I've just reached sort of my Saturn return, astrologically speaking, which means that once every 30 years in one's life, you get sort of tested by this planet. It sort of results in you reevaluating your life, getting serious about things, and looking at the results of your actions and seeing if what you're doing is working or not. So there you have it. I mean, I'm at this point right now, and there's been a lot of things that I've been wanting to educate myself about and finish up before I come out and put my thoughts out in public like this. But I get a really, really strong gut feeling that I should do it right now. And other horoscopes also have been telling me that now is a time when you should put your thoughts out there. And that strongly resonates with me. So here I go. So the main motivation for me beginning this discussion came from a conversation I was having with a friend of mine earlier about Pokemon, this new Pokemon game, which I hear is ultimately basically from the CIA. I'm hearing that some countries are gonna ban it and stuff like that. I haven't confirmed that, but it really stinks to high heaven, and enough, a lot of people are talking about it. But the thing that got me was a friend of mine was saying, well, look, you know, it's like people love smartphones and people love Pokemon, so it's like, oh, now Pokemon on my smartphone, so you know, it's the perfect combo. Now, that definitely is part of it, but there's some other issues that I'd like to bring to our attention with respect to this. So let's see, how should I go about starting this? When you victimize a population or a person, that has a ripple effect. It does things. Now, okay, before I get into that, let's talk about, for example, if you do a good deed, if you do something that's good, it has a ripple effect. You don't always see the ripple effect. You know, you could do holding the door open for somebody or smiling. We don't always appreciate how much that impacts the lives of others and how it might come back to you in like sort of like a dominoes falling fashion. But at the same time, you know, if you do a bad deed, it also results in multiple forms of damage and sort of increases badness, you could say. So in the case of, let's say, satanic ritual abuse, when these Satanists basically go and torture a child. It's that, you know, they'll torture them, they'll rape them, they might electrocute them, who knows, they'll do a lot of things. The goal here, there could be a number of goals, but when you do that, you cause the person's mind to break. And what happens, as many of you know, I'm sure my audience knows, that, you know, you are able to then program one of the sides of that personality. And often you can make like trigger words to cause that person to carry out your commands or programming or whatever. And I'm sorry, there are some cars behind me, so it's a little distracting, but bear with me here. All right, so that's one example with the satanic ritual abuse. If you also pay attention, you'll notice that the same kind of thing happens elsewhere. So it's not just that you get people like Britney Spears, for example, where you can find videos where she basically says a word. I forget which word it was. It might have been weird or something like that, and that word caused her to literally switch personalities or go into some other kind of mind state. And you can just look this up on YouTube, you'll probably find it. So it's not just in the realm of, you know, getting Hollywood and the music industry to carry out your commands and corrupt the youth and inject toxic ideas and hedonism, etc., out there. That's just one example. Now, that you can also look at feminism. A lot of people, if you have your eyes open, you'll notice that a lot of women who are feminists, they've been abused, they've been treated badly, often by men, and they end up sort of, carrying out an agenda, unbeknownst to them, because they're not thinking straight. I'm not trying to poo-poo them or anything. It's just this is one other example. And another example is basically, It's not just when you victimize a population. Yes, in certain parts of the world, gay people do suffer a lot of oppression and whatever, and they get killed for being gay. Okay, but let's say like in the U.S. and in Canada, that doesn't happen. Okay. And the gay pride parades, they end up having, and it's difficult for me to talk about this because, well, for a number of reasons, but they have people that are pretty much, I think it's called BDSM or whatever, these sadomasochistic people that are like walking each other like dogs. Like you'll have a person walking on all fours and dressed in this leather like they're a slave or whatever, and they're on a leash and somebody else is holding them. Now, you can find this at these recent gay pride parades here. So, you know, that is a message that's being sent out to the children that are part of these parades. And what message is that teaching the children? I'm not saying all gay people are into this stuff, but it seems to be that the gay pride parades have a lot of this. That's number one. Number two, the there seems to be like a double standard. So you can Google, you can find footage online of, like, I don't know if it was a 10-year-old or a 9 or 10 or 11, 12-year-old child at one of these parades and basically doing like humping the air and doing this sexualized dancing. So, you know, so that's the double standard. Like, if the heterosexual community, if you want to call it that, which is just most people, if they went around and did something like this, there might be some kind of backlash. Even if you were to have a meme, just simply a meme, and I've seen these memes on Facebook floating around saying straight and proud, like proud of being straight, like, hey, it makes babies and and stuff like that. If you were to just say that, that's politically incorrect. So my point here, ladies and gentlemen, is it's not just when you victimize a population, it's when you create the perception that they are victims as well. So when you have a victim complex, that's not good. I mean, like for me, all the trials and tribulations I've gone through in the past 3 years, you know, it's I strongly feel it's for a reason. And I don't always feel that way, but like I said, in moments of greater clarity, it becomes really apparent. So it doesn't pay to dwell on things and to play the victim. So these are the examples that I listed here so far. I mean, it's the perception of victimization in the gay community, the transgender community, whatever, and in terms of the feminism. You know, you victimize women and then they can go around sort of being bullies and getting pissed off that you're holding doors open for them and stuff like that. And, you know, like, it's okay. So you that's the gay community. You got the feminists and you got the victims of satanic ritual abuse, that end up, you know, being used. So you get the picture. You know, I could elaborate about the manufactured migrant crisis and how that plays into this, you know, Kalergi and so on, but I think that's enough for now. So to tie this back to the Pokemon thing, it's like, you know, like my friend said, people love smartphones, they love Pokemon, and so, you know, to me, my first thought is, like, it's not just that, it's that people are really good at being disconnected from themselves so that they don't even know how they don't know the dynamics that are happening in terms of addictions. They don't know, a lot of people don't understand addiction, and I'll get to that later. But you can really, like, whether it's consumerism or porn or whatever, people are addicted to this game, not just because they love cell phones and love Pokemon, but because there's an imbalance happening between inner work and outer work. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. Like, I'm struggling to find a balance with this myself. It's not always easy to be honest with yourself and to notice when you are distracting yourself. It's not. It's really not. So I'm not trying to come down on these people or act like I'm better than them. So it's just that there is a deeper issue here. And people are really good at pretending like everything's fine. I've noticed that my whole life. My whole life, that all sorts of people, everybody, and it's not just that they're pretending to you. They're pretending to themselves. They're lying to themselves. they are disconnected from themselves. Let me just say it, like, I've said this before, it's you don't have to be an expert in astrology to notice that when the moon is full, you can focus outwards better. And when the moon is empty, you can focus inwards better, more efficiently. Okay, there are, there are other planetary factors that also play into that, that also help you focus inwards versus outwards, but I'm not an expert on that. I just know that for me, it's undeniable that when the moon is full, that you can focus outwards more. And right now, it's a full moon. 7 p.m. today, a few hours ago, it reaches fullness for this cycle. And it's a beautiful full moon, by the way. And it's very energizing. But people aren't... they don't listen to their own bodies. They don't listen to their own intuition. They're made to be... they're made to be, how should I say this? Okay, look, here's the thing. This gift of being able to look inwards is a good thing. And this gift of being able to look outwards is a good thing. And it, both of these can be weaponized. So just like when you hear about, Joe Atwill saying the term weaponized anthropology, which is a brilliant term. You know, it's not that anthropology itself is bad. It's that he reminds us that at one point, I think a third or two thirds of all anthropological research done in the U.S. was government funded. So you really got to wonder about that. So, again, in terms of looking inwards, what is an example of people abusing their gift of looking inwards? Well, it's the whole hippie movement, the whole synthetic CIA hippie movement, with the New Age movement, which Jan Irvin and Joseph Atwill have done a great job of outlining. That gets you to just focus inwards and to say whenever you're looking outwards and pointing the finger and trying to hold people accountable for their actions, that you're wasting your time. Don't do that. Just look inwards forever. It's like if somebody said drink water forever. Just keep drinking water. Or just have a lot of salt. Just keep eating salt all day long. You know, water is great. Have too much of it, you'll die. Okay? This ability to look inwards can be, you know, exacerbated to the point that it defeats the whole purpose of it. Just like the ability to focus outwards. And the example of that is the social justice warriors. They don't know how ridiculous they sound. And look, when people go around dumping urine on Lauren Southern, for example, just for speaking her mind about genders, that is an example of people who don't know how to actually address the inner work that they have to do. Because if you were a balanced person who had, you know, done that, you'd be able to compete in a fair way with your words and like an adult, so that you can, you know, so that everyone can define their terms and be on the same page and come to an agreement. So that doesn't happen. You get people that, oh yeah, they're social justice warriors. They're good at going around and trying to hold people accountable, but they're trying to hold them accountable for stupid stuff. Like I said before, like the holding the door open for a girl. You know, it's absolutely a symptom of being made to be imbalanced, so that you don't know when to look inwards. You don't know when to look outwards. I'm not saying, okay, only ever look outwards when it's a full moon and only ever look inwards when it's an empty moon. These are subtle energies. It's like gravity. You don't always think about gravity when you're walking. You wouldn't be able to live like that. But, you know, it's something to take into account. So again, people are disconnected. And right now, I'd like to read an article about loneliness. To give you an idea of quite how lonely people are. Because that's the reason they're addicted to all this stuff. Whether it's porn, whether it's going around acting like you're better than everyone, getting this high of like holier than thou thing. I'm holier than you because I'm gonna complain about trivial issues, or because I'm gonna leave everybody be and look in words all the time and never hold anyone accountable for any real issues, etc. People are lonely. People are miserable. It might be a little better in some countries versus others, but by and large, you look around at the state of affairs in the world right now globally, and it's not a pretty picture. There's a lot of things that are wrong. And of course, you know, I'm not trying to be negative and whatever and say, oh, that's horrible. I wouldn't be recording this right now if I thought it was a hopeless situation. And I'm not even recording this in terms of like that all these problems will get fixed in my lifetime. It's just, you know, I just sort of like talking about the truth, and I feel obligated about it because a lot of people are walking around with their heads up their asses these days, quite frankly. Like I'm not saying I'm better than them, but there is a harsh reality. There is a harsh reality. I'm not going to go into all of it. You probably can't even go into it. Like it's so much stuff. It's worthwhile trying to. Some brilliant researchers are covering a lot of ground, and I'm going to try to cover that ground with them. But it's tough. It's not looking at reality and looking at the situation around you and noticing the threats in your environment is tough. Because it involves doing that inner work and knowing what is it like. Okay, even though the bad things are happening and people are dominating other people, it's like, why did we let this happen? What is it about us? Why are we so damaged that we overlooked such crucial things? So, yeah, without further ado, I'll get into this article right now. Okay, so this is by Elizabeth Renzetti from theglobeandmail.com, September 18th, 2015. The article is titled, Life of Solitude, A Loneliness Crisis is Looming. Well, I don't have the internet right now and it's not letting me see the full title, but whatever, I'll link it in the show notes. So it begins with Shaheen Shivji was happier in Kabul. There were bombs going off outside the compound where she worked for a development agency, but she preferred life in the Afghan capital to the one she had at home in Abbotsford, BC, for one simple reason. She wasn't lonely. For the first time in my adult life, I didn't feel isolated, she says. I felt socially connected. I was with like-minded people. I was doing something important to better the world, end quote. And I'm just going to stop right there. Yesterday, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking, why did my parents move to Canada? Why did they move? I know Assad is a tyrant. You know, he has killed, or his men have killed my cousin, and that's a whole other story. You know, not to say that I support his downfall and blah blah blah. It's you know, it's a whole huge topic. I strongly condemn all the NATO-backed, Israel-backed, you know, terrorists and the ISIS situation and all that that's happening there. But, you know, I'm just saying, I'm no fan of Assad either. But I was thinking earlier, I was actually thinking, why did my parents move to Canada? And it's, you know, again, everything happens for a reason. I thought about it more and I was like, well, you know what? So be it. I'm here. I'm going to make the most of it. And but the issue is people here are more lonely. There is a difference in culture. There are pros and cons for each situation. Okay, you get more privacy here. You do. It's hard to get privacy. Like, I don't mean in terms of like not having, you know, the NSA spy on your phone. They're doing that like probably globally or whatever, but or as much as they possibly can. But in terms of like, you know, just with people in your life, if you want to spend some alone time and whatever, it's easier to do that here. If you want to date somebody without your entire family and your entire neighborhood knowing, it's easier to do that here. But there's a flip side. People are more lonely too. So, you know, I'm not saying I wish to go back, but part of me sometimes thinks I would have liked it better if I stayed there. Like, I that is a feeling that I have. And you know what? It is more family oriented there. And Morris is right that the powers that be and you know, NATO and them, they target a lot of countries that do support the family. Or that have more family values. That's not an accident. And there's a lot of other things to be said about the whole agenda to destroy the family and, you know, 1984, Big Brother, blah, blah, blah. But this is just one thing that came to mind when I read this article here, because she's saying this about Afghanistan. But I it strongly resonates with me because, yeah, well, you get the picture. The people over there are more community oriented, and there is a little bit more support. When you're going through a hard time, your family's there for you. Here, not so much the case. And that's why one of my recent songs was called "Destruction of the Family." Anyway, moving on. So, Afghanistan, I'm getting back to reading the article here. Afghanistan became too dangerous. And after a year, Miss Shivji moved back to BC, where she lives with her parents and works as a communications manager for local government. And let me just make sure I'm recording here in case. Okay, yes, I'm still recording. that would have sucked if I was just talking to myself for a while. Anyway, so she has one friend she texts regularly, but otherwise her old university crowd has married and drifted away. She yearns for simple connection in her life, to meet a friend regularly for coffee or a movie, to occasionally feel a kind hand on her arm. Work is her main source of satisfaction. The toll of her loneliness isn't just emotional. At 44, she feels tired, distracted, unable to concentrate. It's an effort to get to the gym. Over the phone, her voice becomes strained. Quote, "I feel sad most of the time," end quote. Miss Shivji feels like she's on the outside looking in, and in that sense, she's not alone. In the West, we live faster, higher in the air, farther from our workplaces, and more singly than at any time in the past. Social scientists will be struggling to understand the consequences of these transformations for decades to come. But one thing is clear, loneliness is our baggage, a huge and largely unacknowledged cultural failing. In Vancouver, residents recently listed social isolation as their most pressing concern. More Canadians than ever live alone, and almost one quarter describe themselves as lonely. And I'll pause here and I'll say, Vancouver, this seems to be like like the city that everyone in Canada thinks is like the greatest. A lot of people are going there, you know. And yet, despite that, as I just read, it said in Vancouver, residents recently listed social isolation as their most pressing concern. So moving on, it says more Canadians than ever live alone, and almost one quarter describe themselves as lonely. In the United States, two studies showed that 40% of people say they're lonely, a figure that has doubled in 30 years. Britain has a registered charity campaigning to end chronic loneliness. And last month, Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt gave a speech about the isolated many, calling attention to a forgotten million, quote, who live amongst us, ignored to our national shame, end quote. Now, before I go on, again, we have to be vigilant. Any of these organizations, I haven't had time to vet them and stuff, but usually with stuff like this, you're going to get people like Soros and whatever trying to, you know, turn it into a bad thing. Like Alcoholics Anonymous, for example, you know, that is like a cult. And, you know, people go there and they just pat them each other on the back and they just talk like about how lonely it, or about their problems with alcohol and so on. You know, so it's like I was saying before, anything can be weaponized, almost anything. And so when you're reading about this, if you see an organization that's trying to combat loneliness and whatever, you gotta really check it out and know what their methods are and whatever. Because with stuff like, for example, with nonviolent communication, seems good on its surface. It's like, it's got a name, nonviolent communication. Who wants to have violent communication? You know, but it's not that simple. People who oppose this form of mind control mild hypnosis, they're not people who want to be violent. That's not how it works. So anyway, again, I haven't gone and vetted each one of these organizations that they might name in here or groups that are supposed to be helping people. Just a quick note to stay vigilant in that regard. Moving on with the article. It is the great irony of our age that we have never been better connected or more adrift. The issue isn't just social, it's a public health crisis in waiting. If you suffer from chronic loneliness, you run the risk of illness and premature death. Quote, this is a bigger problem than we realize, says Ami Rokach, a psychologist and lecturer at York University in Toronto, who has been researching the subject for more than three decades. Loneliness has been linked to depression, anxiety, interpersonal hostility, increased vulnerability to health problems, and even to suicide. Even to suicide. End quote for that paragraph. And yet loneliness is the longing that dare not speak its name. Keenly aware that isolation carries with it the whiff of failure, Miss Shivji was reticent to be identified for this story. Inside every lonely adult is a kid eating lunch by herself on a bench. Says Professor Rokach, quote, there is such a stigma about it. People will talk about having depression or even schizophrenia, but I've been practicing for more than 30 years and never has anyone come to me and said, quote, I feel lonely. But then they start talking and it comes out, end quote. This is why David Sutcliffe has launched a bit of a one-man shame reduction campaign. Mr. Sutcliffe is no one's idea of a social outcast. He's a handsome and accomplished actor, once a regular on Gilmore Girls, and now the star of CBC TV's Cracked, about a detective with mental health issues. And yet, for his whole life, he has been plagued by a profound sense of isolation. He stayed inside. He self-medicated. When he was in his mid-20s, his therapist asked, quote, have you always been this lonely? He burst into tears. there was a point when Mr. Sutcliffe, now 44, felt so alone that he would get a massage just to feel another person's touch. He has a friend in Los Angeles who runs a hugging practice, offering long embraces to people who have no one to comfort them. Quote, "At first it seemed like a wacky California idea," he says, "but now it makes complete sense." I mean, okay, so that's the article. Me personally, I don't know about a hugging practice. I think it would be just ideal if everyone just woke up and we called attention to this destruction of the family thing, etc. But you know, whatever. At least they're trying, I guess. Again, you'd have to look into the people doing this and their backgrounds and whatever, because you know, it's like I even prefer to do the fist bump instead of the handshake as well. And I think I've heard Morris say that, like, even shaking hands sort of dilutes us. And yeah, you know. It's, I don't know. I like, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I kind of feel like it does. I prefer the fist bump. And you know what? Okay, I'll say this too. When I was exposing some of the Occupy Nova Scotia stuff that was going on, me and my ex at the time were at one of these general assemblies, right, that were held in like around 8 p.m. or closer to the nighttime, so that when people's brain waves are more susceptible to being influenced, and are, I forget how you say it, but let me think here. Yeah, your mind is somewhat more open to suggestibility when it's the evening. So they held these general assembly meetings at that time, and you know, my ex at the time put her hand up. We were in the audience, and that the so-called leader was at the front saying some bull jive, and you know, he pretty much ignored her hand, I think, if I remember correctly. You know, she got sick of it, walked off, and then I was like, yeah man, screw this, and I walked off as well. What ended up happening was that maybe four or five people, it's a small city, right, in Halifax, so like four or five people came up to us wondering what was wrong, as if we were the problem, as if like they were, one of them was literally in tears looking at me, just wanting to give me a hug, like just frustrated that things weren't working out. And we're like, look man, it's not us that needs the fixing. It's that guy, he's the tyrant. He's not listening to people. He's done extremely fishy stuff, like, you know, like he was sort of acting like he was the self-appointed liaison for the whole movement, and he was telling people in the mainstream media, like, if you want to do interviews with us, you got to come down here to this park. Basically speaking for the whole movement, you know, and just... the whole thing was a joke. So anyway, you know, people just couldn't stand the things weren't working out. Well, of course it's not working out. This whole movement is synthetic. So, you know, instead of hugging me, why don't you just do your critical thinking, and maybe you have some internal work that you have to do so that you're not so emotionally fragile like this. I mean, I didn't say that to the guy, but you know, it just blew my mind that people are this unbalanced. But anyway, getting back to the article. Okay, so it says, it was difficult for Mr. Sutcliffe to watch himself on screen during the first season of Cracked. I saw a very lonely guy, quote, "I saw a very lonely guy, and I know that pain wasn't the character. It was me. But I was glad to put it out there because it's important for people to know they're not alone. We are all struggling." And on that note, I'll say some of my music is pretty sad. My latest song is kind of happy. It's called Race Wars. But I just called it that just to call attention to the race wars. It wasn't that I... that I think the race wars is a happy thing or anything. But anyway, I have always been more a little more into, you know, darker music and sadder music. And that, for me, is the same thing. It's the same reasoning as this guy here. You know, it when I hear a song that's sad and it moves me and gives me goosebumps, it might move me to tears, I feel less alone because I know that somebody out there is feeling what I feel. And that's priceless to me. And again, this kind of thing can be weaponized as well. So you gotta always watch out for even with the music. But moving on. Article says, "We are indeed, but why? Chronic loneliness," referring to the struggling. "We are indeed struggling, but why? Chronic loneliness has roots that are both internal and external. A combination of genes and social circumstance, but something is making it worse. Blame the garage door opener, which keeps neighbors from seeing each other at the end of the day, or our fetish for roads over parks, or the bright forest of condo towers that bloom on our city's skylines. Or blame an increasing self-absorbed society, as John Cacioppo does. Professor Cacioppo, the leading authority on the health effects of loneliness, is director of the University of Chicago's Center for Cognitive and Social Neuroscience. Quote, one of the things we've seen is a movement away from a concern for others. He says in a phone interview, quote, economics basically says you should be concerned about your own short-term interests. There's more division in society, more segmentation. There's less identity with a national or global persona, but rather on the family or the individual. Well, you know, I would say there's also an effort to create a global citizen, make a world government, and get you to just be part of, like, you know, the global society cult kind of thing. So we got to watch out for that kind of thing. But definitely, there is a more of an emphasis on the individual. He's saying, but rather on the family or the individual. But again, the family is under attack. So for me, it's mostly the individual. Anyway, he goes on to say, people aren't as loyal to their employers, and employers are certainly not as loyal to their workers, end quote. Loneliness, it turns out, is as bad for your health as smoking or being obese. And again, I mean, if I were to grow some tobacco and smoke that wouldn't be nearly as bad as purchasing the cigarettes from the stores that have, you know, whatever. I just want to put that out there. I'm not going to go too deep into that right now, but the research that, I'll read that again. Loneliness, it turns out, is as bad for your health as smoking or being obese. The research that Professor Cacioppo has done with colleagues also adds to the growing body of work that shows how bad loneliness can be for your health. It shows that loneliness suppresses the immune system and cardiovascular function, and increases the amount of stress hormone the body produces. It causes wear and tear on a cellular level and impairs sleep. As he writes in his book, Loneliness, quote, these changes in physiology are compounded in ways that may be hastening millions of people to an early grave, end quote. His theory simply is that we are social animals who function most successfully in a collective. The physical pain and degradation caused by loneliness are a kind of early warning signal of a failure to connect, the way the pain of a cut finger tells you to fetch a Band-Aid. And again, I'll pause here about the collective. We want to avoid collectivism. That's an issue. you know, and groupthink. But the idea here is, like, let's say if you take it the other direction, if you're in a jail, if they want to punish you, often they'll put you in isolation in the hole. And I again, these probably these Satanists that do this satanic ritual abuse, you're when you're being tortured like that, you're isolated. So it's again, it's all about balance. So, moving on, a study last year from the University of California at San Francisco showed a clear link between loneliness and serious heart problems and early death in the elderly. Seniors in the study who identified themselves as lonely had a 59% greater chance of health problems and a 45% greater chance of early death. Carla Perissinotto, the doctor who led the study, said she once encountered an elderly patient in a hospital emergency ward who seemed to have nothing wrong with her. She soon realized the woman was so lonely that she just wanted someone to talk to. Other people come to mind first when we think about loneliness as a 70-year-old or 78-year-old woman living alone in a small Ontario city puts it, quote, "I feel like everything is behind me and that there's nothing to look forward to," end quote. About 20% of older people in this country report feeling lonely. According to a 2012 Statistics Canada report. But that's not the whole picture, because a sense of isolation doesn't arrive with gray hair. In a study of 34,000 Canadian university students, almost two-thirds reported feeling very lonely in the past 12 months. That's two-thirds. More Canadians are living alone than at any other point in history. And half again, as many of them, 21%, are more likely to report feeling lonely than those who are part of a couple, 14%. Being alone is not the same as being lonely, of course. Plenty of people are happy to sit in their studies, play World of Warcraft, and not see another human being for days. The problem arises when the lonely become incapacitated by their situation, losing all sense of how to reconnect, and withdraw even further in a wearying cycle. The holiday season, which comes wreathed in, I don't know if that's how you pronounce that, but wreathed in idealized depictions of cheery families, is particularly dreaded. In some cases, isolation is taken to gothic extremes. In Britain, a young woman named Joyce Carol Vincent died and wasn't discovered for 3 years. Neighbors ignored the strange smell coming from in her apartment, and when her body was finally found, the TV was still on. She became the subject of morbid fascination and a documentary. Now, I'll pause here again. I find that a little weird that the TV was on. I don't know if she, like, paid her bills in advance for that to happen or what was going on. I'll have to watch this documentary. But moving on, this month, the story of Harold Percival, a British veteran of the Second World War, caused a brief sensation. When he died alone in a nursing home at 99, a Twitter campaign drew hundreds to his funeral. More than a few observers wondered whether the mourners might have been better employed visiting Mr. Percival while he was still alive. Does the wired world make us feel even more cut off? Proponents and detractors of social media can cherry-pick from studies showing that technology makes people feel either more connected or more isolated, but on this summer from the University of Michigan, this summer from the University of Michigan analyzed subjects' responses to a variety of texted questions during the day and showed that using Facebook increased feelings of loneliness and alienation. Quote, on the surface, the researchers wrote, Facebook provides an invaluable resource for fulfilling the basic human need for social connection. Rather than enhancing well-being, however, these findings suggest that Facebook may undermine it. End quote. Talk to enough lonely people and you'll find they have one thing in common. They look at Facebook and Twitter the way a hungry child looks through a window at a family feast and wonders, quote, why is everyone having a good time except for me? End quote. And you, a lot of you know that. Like, I'm pausing the article. You know that's true. You feel that. I even feel that way sometimes. It's designed from its architecture. You follow Neil Sanders' work. He'll lay it out for you. It's designed in every way. It's designed. It's addictive, like gambling. It's absolutely like that. And you know it. You know it. Marcy O'Connor, 42, is an Anglophone living in the largely French-speaking community of Mont-Saint-Hilaire, just south of Montreal, with her husband and two children. She almost feels guilty for her feelings of isolation, but years of working alone as a freelance writer have taken their toll, and she's now applying to be a waitress so she'll have more human contact. She has come to believe that there is no substitute for that contact, even if it's just a smile while delivering a beer. For a while, Mrs. O'Connor advised companies on their social media strategies, but she has become increasingly disenchanted with the online world. Quote, it's so hollow, she says. Quote, you might get a lot of likes or retweets, but it's fragile and meaningless. It's not like I could call any of these people at 3 a.m. and they'd help me with my flooded basement, end quote. Ask Vancouverites what bothers them, and you'd think they might say house prices, drugs on the street, not being able to get into the hot new sushi joint. But when the Vancouver Foundation asked that question, it received a gobsmacking response. Quote, the biggest issue people had is that they felt lonely, isolated, and unconnected to their communities, says Kevin McCourt, president of the community outreach charity. Last year, the foundation conducted a survey of almost 4,000 Vancouverites and found that one-third of those between 25 and 34 felt, quote, alone more than they would like. End quote. Another one-third said they have trouble making friends. 40% of high-rise dwellers felt lonely, almost twice the number, 22%, living in detached homes. Crucially, the study found that the loneliest also reported being in poorer health and lacking trust in others. Lacking trust in others. Ladies and gentlemen, the social fabric is being ripped apart. The ground is being taken away from under us. The rug is being pulled out from under us, whatever the saying is. Moving on. Quote, social isolation just may be the greatest environmental hazard of city living, writes Vancouver-based author Charles Montgomery in his new book, Happy City, Transforming Our Lives Through Urban Design. Quote, worse than noise, pollution, or even crowding, end quote. And the way we've built cities, suburbs with no central meeting place, prioritizing the car and the condo tower, passing restrictive zoning bylaws, has made the problem worse, he says in an interview. Quote, if we're concerned about happiness, then social disconnection in Canadian cities is an acute problem. And you know what? This resonates with me because I remember there was a store in downtown Ottawa that had a lot of good underground music. And several years ago, a long time ago, they ended up that store was gotten rid of or bought out or something, and they put a condo there. Okay? So, you know, that hurt. That hurt me when that happened. You know? Mr. Montgomery points to cities. This is back to the article. Mr. Montgomery points to cities that have done things right, from Portland turning its intersections, I think that's Portland, Oregon, turning its intersections into urban piazzas, to the community gardens built in disused lofts in Berlin. Research has shown that a varied streetscape will cause people to slow down and perhaps even exchange a smile or flirtatious glance, and that even a brief exposure to nature cutting through a park makes us feel more generous and more social. And ladies and gentlemen, that's why I'm in front of a body of water right now and at a park. And hey, look, there's a duck. Isn't that great? This is the kind of thing, man. Don't chase Pokemon. Just go around and sit on a bench in front of a body of water and look at this beautiful duck. You know, it'll make your day, man. Just try it out, man. This is ridiculous. Like, I'm not saying, like, you know, do this archaic revival and abandon all technology and go live in the forest, but I'm saying, you know, you get what I'm saying. So, the Vancouver Foundation has another answer. It is giving out grants of $500 to people who will organize a community event that brings strangers together. A knitting circle, an origami workshop, a pumpkin carving jamboree. Mr. McCourt attended one gathering recently and was struck by an unfamiliar sight. Quote, no one was on their phone or checking email. There were 100 people just talking and making new friends, end quote. On a personal level, being lonely can seem crippling. And saying, quote, just get out and make friends, is like telling an asthmatic to climb Mount Everest. Professor Cacioppo notes that lonely people will either withdraw into their shells or attempt to soothe their pain by lashing out. And I would argue also by, I'm pausing the article here, I would argue it's also by various addictions, to whether it be porn, drugs, whatever. So, the first step, he says, is to recognize and acknowledge painful feelings and to try to make small advances each day by smiling at a neighbor or performing an unexpected kindness for a stranger. David Sutcliffe says he forces himself to keep a busy social schedule or he would never leave the house. Group therapy has been a huge help. Personally, I'm not a fan of the whole therapy thing and the, psychologists, psychiatrists. You can say a lot about that. But anyway, I guess for some people it can help them. I don't know. So group therapy, he says, has been a huge help. He is also evangelical about sharing his story to combat what he calls, quote, society's tranquility mask, our tendency to pretend that everything is swell, even when it isn't. He knows he speaks for those who can't or won't. See, this is what I was pausing the article again. This is what I was saying before. People are really good at pretending everything is fine. Pretending to you, pretending to themselves, at the cost of their long-term security and at the cost of society at large. It's this tranquility mask. You got to be able to recognize that, man. You got to be able to recognize that. Because if you're not, you will be taken advantage of. Okay, so quote, there are a lot of people walking around who feel that they don't fit in, they don't belong. That sense of disconnection is really common, but when you realize that you're like everyone else, not only in your dreams and passions, but also in your pain and sadness, there's incredible comfort in that. And that's the end of that article. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed this second podcast that I finally decided to record. And I hope this gets you all to think more about the whole balance issue of looking inwards versus looking outwards. It's really important. It's really good to be in touch with your body, to be in touch with your feelings, but also balance that out with critical thinking. These things are paramount, and you know, there's a lot more that could be said about this, but I think at this point in time, it's a good time to wrap it up. And I would urge you to, if you want to hear more podcasts like this, and you want to support my work, please go to potentnews.com and click the donate button at the top. And, you know, help me out. Send a small donation or a large donation via PayPal or Bitcoin. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next time.